if you follow pop theology, you know that kind of the popularity of Mary Vaines and Crescens back and forth. Recently, there's been a revival of the kind of Christian, the role of Mary, whether she's a saint or she's not a saint, and all that. Chazal knew that. Chazal knew her name was Mary. So let's see what they say about her. Ben Stada. Remember we had before in Masechet Shabbos, Chazal called Jesus Ben Stada. And that didn't fit with anything they knew. They knew his mother was Miriam. His father was Joseph, right? Because for him that was his father. For them that was his father. Why are we calling him Ben Stada? So they're getting into kind of classic rabbinic conniptions, right? Ben Stada. What's Ben Stada? So the Gemara says, how are you calling him Ben Stada? That's not his father. Ben Padirahu. His father's name was Pandira. Amar Rav Chisda. So Rav Chisda tries to find a solution. What's the solution Rav Chisda suggests? Baal Stada. Her husband's name was Stada. But her paramour, the person she slept with, Boel Pandira, the person she slept with was Pandira. But anyone says, no, the Baal had a different name. Baal? Baal Papus Ben Yehudu. The Baal's name was Papus. We'll see later, we know who Papus was. Ella the Gemara says, no, Stada, you know why he's called Stada? His mother was Stada. But his mother was married. Imo Stada. Imo Miriam. Megadle Sara Nashi Havayi. Megadle Sara Nashi Havayi is a hairdresser. Where does the name come from anyway? Mary Magdalene. Where Mary Magdalene for them became Megadla Sara Nashi. She was a hairdresser. His mother, at least from Chazal's perspective, she was a hairdresser. Scholars have debated that. There were different people that they... But anyway. Ella... Let me tell you what the name Ben Stada means. Stada comes from the name Sota, a wandering wife. Ben Stada is a combination of Sota Da. She is a Sota. Basically, she's a wandering wife who was unfaithful to her husband. So, here you have again. They call him Ben Stada, and if you're attuned to what they're saying, already you hear a polemic against the virgin birth. No. She's not a virgin Mary who was impregnated by God or something. Really, she was a wandering wife who was unfaithful. That's his name. Number 10 is an interesting source about Mary, which I have not figured out exactly what the polemic is, but it's an interesting story. Again, out of context. Fascinating, the theology and the polemics involved in everything. The Gemara Chagiga discusses where the people can die wrongly, accidentally. Where someone can be killed even they didn't deserve it. And the question is always kind of, we all talk about theodicy. Could it be that someone was punished even though they didn't deserve it? So Rav Bibi Bar Abaye says, yes, I actually have a story. I was buddies with the Malach HaMavet. He would come for coffee occasionally. The Malach HaMavet, right? The angel of death would come to me occasionally just for a cup of coffee. So I actually asked him this question. I'm sorry, he was staying with me and the Malach HaMavet sent one of his agents, right? And he said, go bring me Miriam, the hairdresser. She needs to be killed. And the agent got confused and brought the wrong Miriam. So the agent tells the Malach HaMavet, well, should I take back the wrong person? He says, no, you know what? It's okay. Fine, let's keep her. It's okay. The point that Rav Bibi Bar Abaye wants to make basically is a theological point. People get killed unfairly. But in the context, what is the polemical message they're saying? Really, who should have been killed? Who should have been killed is Mary Magdalene, who for Chazal was the mother of Jesus. Is again embedded, kind of see almost secretly, in a different story, with a different context, with a different message, is a polemic against Christianity. I'm on a first basis contact with the Malach HaMavet, and by the way, they really wanted to kill her. And then but then the question is, but she's alive, she stayed alive. Yeah, that was a mix-up, right? Okay. Historically, again, that this is an anachronism. This is an anachronism because Rav Bibi Bar Abaye was many, many, many years later than the time of Jesus. It's an anachronism, but Tosfos is conscious of that. Tosfos is aware that this is an anachronism, which is the next source number 10. I'm sorry, the second paragraph there, right? Havashchichi gabe Malach HaMavet. So Tosfos is bothered with the anachronism. You're telling me that the Malach HaMavet is telling Rav Bibi Bar Abaye that we wanted to kill Mary. Mary was dead long ago. So Tosfos says, no, the Malach HaMavet was regaling him with interesting stories that happened many, many years ago, right?
The mesaper mashi irelo kvar da hay ibda de Miriam magazin asha the bayit sheni haya. That was happened a long time ago. The hayta imo shel ploni. See, Tosas doesn't want to explicitly say, but Tosas says Mary, the hairdresser, was the mother of Jesus. She was during the time of the Second Temple. How could Rabbi Rabbi talk about it? It's an anachronism. It really happened a long time before. Again, a polemical message embedded almost behind, underneath the radar. You don't notice it, but if you pay attention, really what they're trying to say is you should know Mary deserves to die. Which, by the way, makes you wonder. Makes you wonder, but unless you claim that, as far as Chazal is concerned, Mary was willingly unfaithful. We'll see later in the history, that was a debate among the Jewish tradition. But for Chazal, clearly she was not raped, she willingly was unfaithful. And if she is willingly unfaithful, she would have deserved to die. It was an accident. Why she didn't die? The two final characters. Actually, we're going to talk a little bit about the students. Can we go a bit more over time? Not really? Okay, I'll try that. Okay, now what? Then we'll skip the students and we'll kind of... we'll skip the students. Okay, but his father, it's a bit complicated. And I'm not even sure what the message about it is. Gemara in Gittin, I mean, you gotta wonder, it's so rich. Gemara in Gittin, very interesting. Gemara in Gittin talks about three types of husbands, kind of. The promiscuous, the fanatical, and the normal. Promiscuous husband doesn't care, no matter how much, I mean, at least from a Chazal perspective, how much their wives interact with other men, and how close they get, and how whatever else. Let's go to the average. The average is normal, you know? I mean, he knows that his wife can have friendships outside of him, and she could be friends and get along with people and have kind of a closeness, but it's kind of with measure. Then there are the fanatics. And who is the example of the fanatics for Chazal? Pappus ben Yehuda. As we saw before, Pappus for Chazal was the name of Jesus' father. The scholars have already explained how that kind of Joseph became Pappus. And why was Jesus unfaithful? Because the husband was a fanatic. He would actually lock the door every day when he left the house. And because of that, she became unfaithful. Right? The Gemara in Gittin, Hayar Reb Meir, Omer Reb Meir would said, Keshem Sha'adayot B'machal, just as we have different tastes in food, weird analogy, we have this different tastes in our attitudes to our wives. Kach Deyot B'nashim. So the underlying piece, V'zohi midat papus ben Yehuda, shahaya no'el bifnei ishto, he would lock the door, V'yotze, would lock the door and not let her walk out of the house. And then you look at the Rashi, the next piece, Rashi says, papus ben Yehuda, right, who is papus ben Yehuda for Chazal, ba'ala shel Miriam Magdala Mashia, he was the husband of Mary Magdalene, Mary the hairdresser, when he would go out of the house in the street, no el delad b'faneha, he would close the door. Fanaticism is destructive. Shemitoch kach eva nichneset beinehem umzana tachta. Right? She hates him, she resents him, and then eventually she becomes unfaithful. It's a polemic on multiple levels. Pappus was a fanatic, which kind of historically could be accurate because we know that it was the John the Baptist. John the Baptist was very popular at the time of Jesus. And some scholars have made the argument that they were the precursors of Christianity's attitude to its sexuality. And a very, very negative attitude to its sexuality. Very negative attitude to women and relationship with women. And some have argued that this informed this Chazal polemic. Pappus ben Yehuda was part of the John the Baptist group. Fanatic, possessive, and all that. Okay. Number 12 is an interesting story. Again, in the interest of time, I'll kind of give you the abbreviated version. But apparently, Pappus ben Yehuda met Rabbi Akiva during the time when the Roman forbade learning Torah. And Rabbi Akiva taught Torah in public, and Pappus told him, Rabbi Akiva, are you crazy? You're not concerned? You're not afraid? This is dangerous. And he said, I don't care. I'm going to learn Torah anyway. Eventually, Rabbi Akiva is arrested. But then Pappus is arrested as well. And Pappus says, lucky you, Rabbi Akiva. You were arrested for a very lofty cause, for teaching Torah in public.
I was not arrested for such a lofty cause. But they don't tell us why. So I don't know. I don't know what the story is, but clearly there is a point they're trying to make that he was not the most upstanding citizen. And contrasting that with the previous text where apparently he was a fanatic, it's kind of interesting to see where they have this mixed kind of attitude towards him. On the one hand, he's a fanatic, which you would assume would mean that he is an upstanding citizen, and yet he was incarcerated. He was put in jail. But we don't know why. We don't know why. Okay. In the interest of time, and we're running out of time a little bit, we'll skip. Section number 4 is the students. If you want to look at source 13, source 13 lists his students, and it's interesting because at least some of the names conform with the New Testament, with the Gospels and the New Testament. We have Matthew there, which clearly is underlined. Matthew is one of the Gospels. The others, scholars have tried to kind of see Nakai, is Nicholas, is that him? There's another name, Nitzar, another student, his name was Nitzar. Okay, let's go to source 14 just for a second, and we'll skip and we'll go to the, and we'll kind of move on to the next phase. Source 14, the first source quote that I bring is actually not a contemporary, but a pretty recent source, but it's something that has been, I couldn't find on the Bar-Ilan a text that says it. But it's been true for many years. The term mean, mem yud nun sofir in Chazal, whenever they talk about minim, it's a big debate whom they're referring to, but a lot of scholars believe that the term min always refers to Christians. And there's actually even a little kind of a drashi idea. Min is rashei tevot, mitalmidei yesho notri. So that's what people claim. Now, whether the rashei tevot is true or not, I don't think so, but nevertheless, there are those who claim that min, which is a heretic, is referring to yesho, to Jesus and Christians. What that means is that oftentimes you find the Chazal talking about minim, and in my experience, reading those texts as referring to the Christians sheds tremendous light on them. All of a sudden you understand what the polemics are, what the ideas is, what the problem is, what they're referring to. Okay, let's turn the page and move on in the interest of time. So I will summarize what I had in this box number 5, but very briefly. And the reason why I'm doing it is because I want to make a point. Oh, you know what? Before I go to source 15, the boxed piece, 16, you should take a look at... take a look at source 16 for yourself, because we see them poo-pooing the name evangelism. They're making fun of the evangelism. Actually, you know what? We can see the first line in source 16. Remeir habakari lei, he was referring to the... This is referring, obviously, to the Gospels, which are the evangelists, the evangelisms, right? The preachings. Habakari lei avon gilion, a pamphlet full of sin. Rabbi Yochanan Avakar loy avon gilion, as a different form of sin. But evangelin for them is avon gilion, right? The G and the G. So basically, again, polemically, calling it names, word plays and all that. Also, whenever we engage in Christianity and with Christians, we have a certain image which counters their image. So to summarize, before I'm going to talk about the last piece, to summarize this, basically Chazal were very critical, very outspoken. They clearly had the gospel story in front of them, which is, again, to reiterate one more time, the highlights of his miracle performance, his virgin birth, and his theology, and they did not miss any opportunity to critique each of them. He was a sorcerer, he was a heretic, and he was actually a mamzer. And as a matter of fact, he was punished. And I want to go back actually to the source where we saw these disgusting punishments, boiling semen and boiling excrement in Chazal. That's usually a punishment for sexual impropriety. Again, okay. Now, okay. I'll try to go to 11. Is that okay? Okay. Now, because this is important, this section. And now, the reason why this section 5 is important is actually it's not in context of what I'm trying to talk about today. Nevertheless, I'll mention it simply because it's going to illustrate very strongly illustrate another element, meaning. So far we've talked about explicit polemics, very explicit polemics against Jesus and actually against a person. All these horrible things, he's this, he's that, he's that. Now, they're not explicit to us because they were taken out by the censors, but they were there. At the same time, there's a lot of hidden polemics against Jesus that, with a good eye, you'll notice it. And I want to just pick one example, explore it for a few minutes, and then we'll move on. the entire Kriyat Shema section of davening. I shouldn't say the entire. 80% section of Kriyat Shema by davening in Shachrit is a Christian polemic. Now we don't know it, because it's very kind of sneaky and hidden, but if you pay attention, you'll realize it's a Christian polemic. Let me just look at the first quote in the box, number 17. Next back to the quote from the Gemara in Brachot. The Gemara in Brachot says that in the time of in the Beit Mikdash, when they davened, before Kriyat Shema, they would say the Aseret Adibrot. So the Ten Commandments. And that's the quote that the Gemara is referring to. The Korin Aseret Adibrot Shema v'haya im Shemoa v'yomer emes v'yatsi v'avodah v'asa. Amar v'yodah v'shmuel. Av b'givulin, even outside of Jerusalem, outside of the Beit Mikdash, b'kshu likrot Cain, they also wanted to institute that they should read the Aseret Adibrot. And why did they not do that? Eloshekvar bitlum mitnei taromet haminin. Because of the minin, we kind of did not include Aseret HaDibrot in Kriyat Shema, in davening. Now, assuming that this argument that minin refers always to Christians, what do you think is the problem? Why would keeping Aseret HaDibrot in Kriyat Shema be a problem that would seem to support minin? Yeah? Exactly. Christianity argued that the rest of the Torah is not important anymore. What we need to keep is the commandments, right? Faith, love your neighbor, honesty, and so on and so forth. So Chazal were afraid that if we're going to put in Aseret HaDibrot in the central part of davening, people are going to say Christianity is right. They left it out, but they kept it there. Anybody know why? Where? We don't have time to do that, but if you go home tomorrow and learn Shacharit, you'll think about it, you'll see in Kriyat Shema there is all the Aseret HaDibrot embedded. We'll find hints to it. The Yerushalmi goes through the whole list, but you don't have time to do that right now. But there's faith, there's Shabbat, there's honesty, there's faithfulness, and all that. Okay, now let's think about it. So if Kriyat Shema is in lieu of the Aseret HaDibrot, now let's look for a couple of minutes the surrounding tefillot, how they are loud polemics against Christianity. Why do we have Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Parshat Tzitzit, in Kriyat Shema? Kriyat Shema is basically the first two parshiot. Tzitzit is not a real part of Kriyat Shema. Why is it there? So the Gemara says in Masechet Brachot, because it says, Lo taturu achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem. Basically, it argues against heresy, against Avodah Zarah. So we put in that text to tell you, if you read Kriyat Shema, you might assume that what's essential is Aseret HaDibrot. Let me tell you, no. Lo taturu achrei levavchem v'achrei einechem. Maybe we don't have time now, but in source 16, you'll see it on the there. Okay. The entire bracha precedes Krishma, Ahava Rabbah, is a polemic against Christianity. Ahava Rabbah, Ahavtanu, Hashem Elokeinu, Lechem Legedar, V'Yisrael, Mal Tereid, V'Nom Kerem, Arzun, Shalom, Lechem, 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 right? So that's number one. We're asking God, even though we're going to emphasize Kriyat Shema, just one second, we're going to emphasize Kriyat Shema at Kol Divrei Talmud Torah Secha. What does it say at the end? Maher v'havei aleinu v'racha v'shalom mehera maher v'akamfei sa'aret yishvor ol agayim v'ol agaliyos me'al tevereinu. What's the connection? Redeem us. Please bring us the redemption. We were not redeemed yet. We are not redeemed yet. And then what do we finish? Right? No unity of God. No polytheism. There is no Trinity. We are unique because we believe in a single God. So kind of, I just wanted to use this example because close attention to any rabbinic text will reveal continuous hidden polemics. The entire structure of Kriyat Shema the surrounding structure, whether it's the bracha before, whether it's the vayomer afterwards, is a polemic. Quickly, I know I'm tempted, I can't resist. The birchat hashachar, we all know the birchat hashachar. We're all, as moderns, are struggling, shlo isani evet, shlo isani isha, and all that. I'm not saying it's a satisfactory answer. Some people said that it was a polemic against Christian egalitarianism, right? One of the basic tenets of Jesus was everybody is equal in front of God, everybody is the same. In order to argue that, they had to say, no, there are hierarchies, there are differences. It's not satisfactory for me. It still kind of troubles me, that bracha, but some people have suggested that was an argument against Christian egalitarianism, where everybody is the same, slave and master and all that. Okay, to sum it up, this is the rabbinic period. This is the rabbinic period. The rabbinic period is a very critical period. Did not miss any opportunity, did not miss any chance to undermine, critique, poo-poo, ridicule Jesus. In the Middle Ages, that changed. That changed. We have bits and pieces where people make reference to Jesus, but slowly and gradually, the polemics become very narrowly focused on the theology, not on the personality, to the point where we'll see how it culminates very fascinatingly. So I'm going to quickly run through, as you see in the next page of the sheet. Basically, I'm going to go through kind of a couple of centuries in 5 minutes. In the Middle Ages, there were a lot of polemical books that were written, but there were polemical books that basically were discussing the theology, as I said, not the personality. There were, however, rare occasions where people published books discussing the personality. The first book that's very interesting is between 1900 and 1000, basically 10th century, there was a book called Toldot Yesho. Toldot Yesho, the author, it's not clear exactly who the author is, it's a debate. He purported to write a biography of Jesus. It was written in a novel form, a lot of silly things in there, but we're already noticing a shift from the rabbinic harsh attitude towards a more moderate attitude. Toldot Yesho does not describe Jesus as a heretic. The most he would say is that he was a little silly and foolish. And more importantly, for Toldot Yesho, Mary was raped. Mary no longer was an adulterer. She was raped. That's his story. Now, Toldot Yesho was an Orthodox, it's an anachronism. But Toldot Yesho was a religious writer. And he took his sources from Chazal. Most scholars believe, and I'm convinced of that too, it was a conscious shift of tone. We're not going to be so harsh. Jesus was not a sorcerer. Jesus was not a heretic. He was a fool. He was a fool. And as a matter of fact, his mother was innocent. She was raped. She wasn't an adulterer. The next book during the 10th century is Nistar Komar, fascinating book. Again, these books are not clear exactly who the author is. Most people believe it was written in 10th century. It was written somewhere in the East, in Arabic originally, by a convert. Nistar Komer. Komer is a priest, right? A hidden priest. This was a priest who converted to Judaism, who wrote a polemic against Christianity. Who wrote a polemic against Christianity, but, again, already much more moderate, much more modified. Okay, when we get to the 11th century, and we won't have time to cover all the, I will do one of them. So, in the 11th century, we have the Balei HaTosfot, who I think you've heard before last year. The Balei HaTosfot are very, very open and accepting of Christians. As a matter of fact, their main town says, Christians of his time don't have a status of idolaters. Tosfot says it in a couple of places. We don't have time to go through it. But the Bain of Tam thinks Christians don't have the status of idolaters. So, not only are we not talking about Jesus anymore, but Christianity is not as terrible as it was a couple of generations earlier. 12th century, you have a quote from the Rambam in Agarat Teiman, right? The letter they wrote to Yemenites. Look what the Rambam says. He was not even a mamzer. You're just going to read the underlined piece that I have. It's 1100 to 1200. There's a letter from the Rambam. The Rambam wrote to the Ammonite Jews. V'ulam, nikra'ehu mamzer. We are calling him a mamzer, not because he really was a mamzer. L'haflig b'cherpato. We wanted to kind of exaggerate in his humiliation. So because, and the Rambam talks about Chazal, and the Rambam says, no, he really was not a mamzer. We were just trying to exaggerate it and humiliate him more than necessary. We called him a mamzer. Clearly a shift
from the adamancy in Chazal, where he was a mamzer, a sorcerer, everything. Well, he's not really a mamzer. Okay. When we get to 1300s, it gets very interesting. And it gets very interesting because 1300s, we have two very famous Christian debates. We have the Parisian debate. Rabbeinu Yechiel Miparis was asked to debate Christians. And we have the Barcelona disputation, which was in 1236. In 1236, 1263, thank you. Thank you. 1263, so let's go in order. So, Rabbi Yechiel Miparis in 1240 was asked to debate Christianity. Which text was the one that he was most vexed with and most troubled with? The one that we saw Chazal say that Jesus was fed with all these disgusting things. And they called him to task for that. I said, what? Is that what your tradition believes? That Jesus was fed semen and excrement? What does he say? He uses an internal argument. He says, as you remember, we saw that the first text about Jesus was anachronistic. Because Chazal describing during the time of Yeshua ben Prachia, which was 150 years before the Korban, and we know actually that he was about 40 years before the Korban. What does Rabbi Yechiel ben Paris say? No, there were two Jesuses. There were two Jesuses. The one that Chazal described as being fed excrement and all the other horrible things, he was a horrible person, and he actually lived 150 years before the Korban, and he was a student of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Prach, and he was a sorcerer, and he was a heretic, and he was all the other things. The real Jesus? 40 years before the Korban? No, he was a nice guy. They weren't saying all that terrible things about him. Now, it's complicated, because clearly he had an agenda there. But nevertheless, he incorporated the problems that we were confronted with. The anachronism in Chazal used it to his favor and established that the Jesus, that the Christian founder of Christianity, is not that horrible person. That's another one, right? That was a trick, right? That's another one. Well, very interesting. I mean, there are other things, but we gotta hurry through. 1263, the Ramban had the famous Barcelona disputation with Pablo Cristiani. Pablo Cristiani was a Jewish convert who converted to Christianity, and basically he was close to the government and close to the authorities, and he forced the Ramban to debate him on the merits of Christianity. If you look under the heading 1263, I have a quote from the Ramban in that debate where the Ramban said, "Lo nadaber al Yesho ha'ish." I don't even want to talk about Jesus as a person. I exclusively want to focus on the question of whether the Messiah has come or not. So we already see the Ramban not even at all engaging in a discussion about Jesus, the person. All I want to do is talk on the merits of the theology. Let's discuss the theology. So clearly we're seeing a very strong shift in the Middle Ages. The Rambam says he was not a mamzer. The Rabbeinu Tam doesn't think Christianity is Avodah Zarah. Rabbeinu Yechiel in 1240 thinks that this is not the Jesus that we're talking about. Those are different Jesus. And the Ramban does not want to address him at all. Okay, I can't resist, as an aside, I mean, bracket it for a moment. One of the interesting things in that debate, actually, is because someone asks the Ramban a couple of questions from Agadata, from Agadat Chazal. And the Ramban says, I don't believe that everything that the Chazal say in Agadata was true. Agadata. He uses the term Agadata. Agada. Almost right. And if I'm wrong, then I stand corrected. Midrash? Oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. Yeah. It's Midrash. Thank you for correcting me. He makes the distinction between Chazal in the Talmud and the external sources. Right. Midrasa. Right. He makes the Sirmonsha. He uses the French for sermon. He says, Midrash is a sermon. Thanks for correcting me. Midrash is a sermon. I don't have to believe it. I want to make sure that we understand. It's never clear when someone says something like that, whether he means it or not. Is he telling it to them or not? Okay. Again, we don't have time to cover that, but during the 13th century, we also have the Me'iri. The Me'iri says when Chazal says so bad things about Goyim, it's about Goyim who are not religious. Religious people, regardless of what their religion is, the Me'iri says. The Me'iri wrote that in around circa 1315. He says, when Chazal talk bad about Goyim, it's not only Goyim who don't have any religion. If they have any form of religion, then they're not a problem. Okay, you know what? We're going to wrap it up because we have an interest of time. In the 14th century, we also have
similar movements, right? It was during the Spanish expulsion, first and second. A lot of polemical treatises were written, but again, they more and more focus exclusively on the issues of theology, not on the issues of the personality of Jesus. You'll see in the sources it's interesting. And finally, to wrap it up, we come to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, which is the setup for the next talk that we're going to have either later or at some point. We come to the setup of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So, briefly, a biography of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Rabbi Yaakov Emden lived in he was born 1694, a 1690 thing, and he died 1776. Rabbi Yaakov Emden was a very complicated personality. Rabbi J.J. Schechter, who some of you might know, has written his doctoral dissertation on the Emden. Very complicated personality on multiple levels. We'll talk more about him in our next talk as well. But briefly, an itinerary figure, traveled around a lot in Germany, in Holland, and so was his father. Interesting person, his father as well. We'll talk about that later. Very complicated personality, very argumentative. Didn't get along with every town he went to, he had fights and arguments. But also very outspoken, has written a lot. What's important to understand for this next letter, and you're going to read it on your own simply because I don't have time, is he was this unbelievable fighter against Sabbatianism. Unbelievable fighter against Sabbatianism. Every form of Sabbatianism. And his father had to run away from Holland because of his fight against Sabbatianism. But the Emden was unbelievable. Almost obsessed his entire life. And what was he most famous for? He argued that Rabbi Yonatan Eibeschitz, who was a contemporary Gadol, was probably one of the greatest scholars of his time, a prolific writer, a posek, and so on and so forth, he said that he knows that Rabbi Yonatan Eibeschitz is a Sabbatian. A Sabbatian is basically around 1665, there was a person in Holland called Shabbatai Tzvi, who basically is Sabbatian. Shabbatai Tzvi, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. So he claimed that Rabbi Yonatan Eibeschitz was a crypto-Sabbatianism. The entire Jewish community was in an uproar. And still is, by the way. Still is. Until today's day, there's debate. Gershom Scholem, who is the greatest scholar in Jewish mysticism, argued that it was true. Reuven Margolius, pretty well-known scholar, a more orthodox scholar, argued that it isn't true, and the debate still goes on. Anyway, but Rabbi Yaakov Emden was obsessed with his fight against Sabbatianism. As a result, he had to run away from his town. The Swedish king, who was in control of part of Prussia at the time, eventually intervened on his behalf and made sure that he can come back to his hometown, even though he had to run away. In gratitude of that, Rabbi Yaakov Emden wrote a letter, which is in your booklet. We don't have time to read it. Rabbi Yaakov Emden wrote a letter about Christianity. It's unbelievable the degree of positivism in that letter to its Christianity and very casually to his Jesus himself. We don't have time to go through it. We're running out of time. Read it. It's a fascinating letter. Which is true for everything, every source we saw. This is not... Right. What you're saying is basically true for almost every source, obviously, as I said in my preface, that we always have to kind of think and consider what is the context and what are the purposes. Nevertheless, knowing what we know about Rabbi Yaakov Emden, it is not surprising that his letter is so effusive, so positive. No doubt it had an agenda and it had a purpose in mind, but nevertheless, it's interesting to know that shift that we're already noticing from Chazal's harsh criticism to the kind of more or less silence and almost defense in the Middle Ages to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, which has even the most positive attitude to its Christianity at the time. As in, Blue Grimberg has written an essay on this letter, and she writes basically one word: a new pluralism was emerging out of medieval isolationism. And that's this letter that you have in front of you. Shkoch.